This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs.
They call me Hal. They call me Stacey. They call me Her. They call me Jane.
Everybody, this is episode number 43 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
I don't feel so good.
The plague, man.
The plague, man. And I wasn't even at the pre-release. This is Oakland plague.
It's just catching up, slowly but surely.
This is, I'm going to let you stay on my houseboat plague.
Yeah. I tend to do that.
We have some fun things to talk about this week. Hopefully that takes my mind off of this cold that I can't seem to shake. The first thing I want to start off with is our Patreon. We have three new Patreon subscribers since our last episode. Thank you, Michael, Barbara, and Cody, for your support. We also unlocked our second milestone goal, thanks to you all. So next month, we will start doing our group streams, where one of us will either draft and the rest of us will backseat pilot, or one of us will play Mono Blue Tron or Abzan Aggro or whatever else we have on Magic Online, and you all can hang out with us. So, yay!
Yay! Cool.
Yeah, it only took less than a month. We're kind of killing it.
Yeah. We are. Chugging along.
Our Woman of Excellence this week is Donna Vasquez Burton. She was nominated by a listener, and the listener said in his email, he said, on July 10th, 2013, Donna's son Hunter committed suicide. Hunter was a Magic player with several notable finishes under his belt, including a fourth-place finish at Pro Tour Houston. In March of 2014, his family, headed by Donna, organized the first-ever Hunter Burton Memorial Magic Open. This event drew in 170 players and featured a $5,000 cash prize pool, with some of the money going towards the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. This event continues to grow, and this year it will be held on March 26th, 2016 in Arlington, Texas. Donna freely admits that she doesn't know what the cards necessarily do, but that doesn't stop her from going to the event and staying until the winner is declared. She stays all day long, volunteering her time and energy, because in her words, Hunter would have stayed. If you'd like to know more about the event, you can visit the Hunter Burton Memorial Magic Open page on Facebook. So keep up the good work, Donna. Pre-release was this weekend. I did not go, but I believe you all went. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Hallie, why don't you kick it off? What did you do? I think you went to four events.
I did go to four events. I played in four-round tournaments, and my record overall was 11-3-2, which was pretty good. I intentionally drew one match with a friend after we were both 3-0, and I unintentionally drew a match with kind of an odd character who was playing a little slowly, but, you know, it's pre-release. These things happen. It was really fun. I enjoyed the set. I feel like I had a pretty good handle on it. Some cards that impressed me the most, I was talking about this on my stream a little bit last night, but the Gravity Negator, mm-hmm. The 2/3 flyer that gives something else flying for a colorless, really impressive. If you can't deal with that thing, it just gives the huge Eldrazi flying and they come at you. And a lot of the flyers are really small, so they can't really block them profitably. So that was really cool. Another card that really impressed me was the Immobilizer Eldrazi, which is the Uncommon Piker. It's a 2/1 for one and a red. And if it has an activated ability for, I think it's 2 and a colorless. It says that any creature whose toughness is greater than its power cannot block that turn. So there was one game where I was playing like a black-white allies deck because I had a lot of ally synergies. I had like the 2/4 vampire, the 2/4 like uncommon vampire that was really good. And my opponent just activated a Immobilizer Eldrazi and basically prevented all but one of my creatures from blocking. And it was just rough. I really enjoyed the set. I thought Reality Smasher, the 5/5 trample haste Eldrazi that has pseudo hexproof, like your opponent has to discard a spell, they have to discard a card the first time they target it with a spell or ability. Like, that seemed really cool. That won me a game. I won with it. I lost to it. It was really good. And yeah, I just think the set has a lot of really cool cards that do really fun and interesting things. The judges at my pre-release did a really great job of explaining the colorless mana symbol to everyone, so that went really well. Kudos to my friend Judge James, who is an L2, who stepped in and covered a lot of pre-releases, because my game store does lots of pre-releases around the clock, and they need a lot of people to step in. So, yeah, it was a really great weekend. Robert and I had a lot of fun. Kirby came along. He had fun. So, yeah, really enjoying OGW so far.
Did you get to play Two-Headed Giant?
We did not. Our store didn't offer Two-Headed Giant this weekend, but they'll be offering a Two-Headed Giant tournament this coming Sunday that we're planning on playing in.
How do you feel that the set compared to Battle for Zendikar? Like, is this something, like, from the sealed perspective and the draft perspective, like, do you think this will be as fun?
I think so. I definitely like green a lot more. and my biggest complaint about BFZ draft was that, you know, that it, when there was one color that was entirely unplayable, it really offset the draft environment and just didn't make me feel good just viscerally. So I'm really looking forward to actually, you know, having a more balanced draft environment. It seemed like, you know, the Scion Makers were a lot better. There were also a lot more really good, like, big creatures that you could ramp into. Like, you know, when I think of, like, big, scary Eldrazi from BFZ, I think of things like Bane of Balaged, which is very easily removed with, like, a common black removal spell. So the Eldrazi in this set were definitely a lot harder to deal with and a lot more game breaking. I remember, you know, in BFZ, it felt like the synergies were more important. Whereas in this set, it feels like, you know, sometimes you can play that one card that just swings the game in your favor. So it'll be interesting. It'll definitely be an adjustment, but I'm interested to see how it drafts as a cohesive set.
Hmm. Katie, what was your pre-release in Bozeman like?
So my pre-release was one of the most fun pre-releases I've had in a very long time. I went into it with a mindset that was, like, much more casual than I usually am, and I tried not to mean mug people, and the whole weekend I just had a really good time. So I did my first one on Saturday night, and I went 3-0, and I played a blue-black deck that on paper seemed pretty subpar. Like, I built it and I was talking about it with some friends and I was like, yeah, this deck is pretty mediocre. But it ended up doing well, so Heart of the Cards was there. It seems like all my rares were just in those colors, and then all of my commons and uncommons just kind of sucked. So I just kind of played my rares in all the games, and that worked out. I had a Remorseless Punishment, which turns out is pretty sweet. And Ugin's Insight, I really like that card. I hope it has potential in Standard after Dig Through Time and Treasure Cruise rotate out. So I'm kind of excited about that card. And then I opened a lot of Dimensional Infiltrators over the weekend, which is the 2-1 Flash Flyer, who can bounce himself sometimes and mill them into exile. And he was just sweet, like, flying in most limited sets is just good. But I was pretty impressed at him in a sealed capacity. And then Sunday I played 2-Headed Giant with my friend Todd, and we went 3-1. We had a really cool white-black allies deck that just seemed to have all the good pieces. We had some Calastria healers, we had Cliffhaven Vampire, so every time we'd play an ally, they'd lose life, then we'd gain life, then they'd lose life again, and that was a lot of fun. And then I played a deck that was less impressive, but it was like a blue and colorless deck that we splashed green in, and I played Endbringer, and we had some Blinding Drones and Prophet of Distortion, so I kind of just did a ramp thing, and then I drew some cards, and I like drawn cards, so that all worked out, and we ended up going 3-1. We lost to a foil Gideon, and I was like, not only is it Gideon, but it's also foil for the extra rubbins. And then Sunday night, I played again, and I went 2-1, and I had, like, a red-blue aggro deck. It was kind of just a bad deck. There was nothing very impressive about it. but I played against the card Captain's Claws, which is a 2-mana equipment that equips for 1, and every time the creature attacks, they get a 1/1 ally token that's tapped and attacking, and it just stays around for forever. And that card, in like a limited format, was pretty sweet. I didn't have any ways to answer it in my colors, and I ended up winning that round, but every time she played it, I was like, oh my god, this card is just so good. Because you can just equip it to whatever, swing, it doesn't even matter if that guy dies, because then they have another guy, and it triggers allies, and then you can re-equip it, and I was just like, oh, jeez. But overall, the weekend was really fun. I did have a lady listener come up to me, which does not happen in Montana, really, ever, and said that she was starting to listen to the show, and she was liking what we were doing, so shout out to Karina. Weekend Yay. Was really fun.
Now, you mentioned, I know Hallie mentioned that her judge did a really good job of explaining the colorless mana to people. Do you feel, Katie, that people understood it well at your pre-release, or was there some trouble there?
I didn't play in our main event that starts at like 1 p.m. on Saturday, which is usually our biggest draw, and I didn't play at the midnight, but I think people were for the most part understanding it. There was a little bit of confusion about some of the cards like Blighted Fen that still had the circle instead of the Wingding, and they were like, does the circle work for the Wingding? Or so there's a little confusion on that, but overall, I don't think any of the mechanics were like super unclear or gave people a lot of trouble, so that's always good at a pre-release.
Okay, because I know the way some judges made it sound on social media going into this, they're like, oh, this weekend's going to be a doozy, and I was like, oh, no, and so I'm glad it didn't turn out like that.
Yeah, no, we didn't have too many problems.
Cool. Chris, how did yours go?
Let's see. The first one was at midnight that I went to. I didn't do so great. I was trying to do, like, a 3-color thing with black, red, and white, and I eventually just took the red out and said, fuck this, I don't need it. You don't need to give your creatures haste. Who gives a shit about that? Brute Strength is a cool card, but I'm like, I'll be fine without it. I will say that Endbringer is insane. That card is just, like, out of this world. And I pulled it in the midnight release and in Two-Headed Giant the next day, so that was quite wonderful. And for those listening, Endbringer is the one that you can do, like, a billion different things with it. It's like a Swiss Army knife, basically. Yes. So you can untap it during each other player's untap step. Are you kidding? It's like a Christmas present early. You can tap him to deal 1 damage to target creature or player.
And can I interrupt you for a second?
Yeah.
For a judge? Okay, so Judge Katie, I have a question about that. So when you say each other player's untap step, so if you're playing Two-Headed Giant, and so does that mean you could untap Endbringer 3 times, or does each giant have just 1 untap step?
They take their untap step together, so he's not quite as broken as he could be. So, yeah, he just untaps the 1 time, unfortunately.
Okay, because I was thinking you could, like, tap, and then, like, in response to your untap, or something like that, you know what I'm saying?
Just
like,
yeah.
That would be gross. Okay.
Yeah, he's not that good. Yeah, he's good, but
yeah, like that would be insane.
Yeah,
okay, sorry.
No, like if we were playing like a 4-player commander game and Chris had the Endbringer, she would get to untap it during my untap step and then Aaron's and then Katie's, but they take their turns at the same time. They have like the same phases at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. I was just curious.
Yeah. You can tap him to deal 1 damage to target creature or player, or you can tap him and a colorless, so that target creature can't attack or block, or 2 colorless, and tap him to draw a card. And he's just a 5/5 and pretty baller. Out of everything aside from that, I didn't pull too many great things, but I got the promo Sphinx of the Final Word, so that was pretty awesome. So I'm like, yay! Dazzling Reflection is a pretty cool card, I thought, for Limited, and Gift of Tusks. So both of those were good. They did some work. I had more fun the second day when I did Two-Headed Giant. I actually got a promo Nissa, so I'm quite excited about that. I did, yes, I did a blue-white flyers deck, and I kind of focused heavily around, like, Roiling Waters to try to, you know, return creatures back and everything. I had the Jaywar. It took me forever to say that. I was like, Jaywar. Jaywar Isle Avenger. Surge was actually pretty awesome for us. Like, I had been reading some article that said, oh, Surge is going to suck. But it was actually pretty great because, you know, your partner's like, cast this. And we're like, ha, I get to have this big fatty for, like, a Surge cost. Like, that's pretty cool. Immolating Glare, the card is amazing. I want to have, like, five.
Is that the White Doomblade?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, my God. It's just wonderful. And, like, we made a mistake, and I use it on something derpy, and I should have saved it for something better later. But it was like, that's okay. Maybe we can still come back from this. That'll be all right. I have to agree with Hallie. Gravity Negator, so cool. And I think I pulled, like, three of them. So I was like, well, these are all going in here. it was just great to be like, okay, we're going to go to attacks. So my guys got flying, and now I'm going to give, like, just ground Eldrazi flying or something, and we'll sail over your heads and hit you for a fuck ton. So that was really awesome. I still like playing Two-Headed Giant. It's pretty cool. But yes, it definitely tests the strengths of your friendships, your relationships, everything. I did beat Nick and our friend Lee. Ben and I partnered up, and we were like, yes, we're 2-0, and then that quickly changed. But it was...
You beat your own boyfriend.
Yeah, it was really funny. it was...
I was going to say, there's got to be a story here.
Oh, yeah. He was like... And I'm just like, yes. Like, I could just sit here and just drink your salty tears all day. It was so wonderful. But, yeah, I don't know. There's just something, I guess, to be said about having to play with another person and make decisions and... try not to tilt on them afterwards when you're like, why are we losing? Because that was me. But all in all, pre-release was fun. I thought there were some really cool cards, and I just can't wait to get my hands on the ones I really, really want so I can finish out my Elves deck.
There was an incident this past weekend. I was at FNM myself when I first heard about it. Somebody on Twitter had said that they knew somebody who was on the Magic Online beta, and that when they went to build a deck and they checked the little box that said Modern to see the pool of Modern legal cards, two cards were missing from this card pool, Splinter Twin and Summer Bloom. This person immediately raced to Reddit and told Reddit that this means that these cards are banned. This means that Splinter Twin and Amulet Bloom are going to be banned on Monday. It took over social media. It was all anybody could talk about, a lot of speculation. And then finally, Blake from Daily MTG released a post saying, we don't want you all going into the weekend with confusion, so we're just going to push the banned and restricted announcement out tonight, and that way you can kind of chew on it this weekend, confirming that these two cards are in fact banned, that Splinter Twin and Summer Bloom are banned. And also, if you play Pauper, that a card called Cloud of Fairies was banned. I guess the Pauper hands were really excited about that. I guess the fairies were pressing the format. But it's true. Splinter Twin and Amulet Bloom are out, and the reaction was swift. People were very, very vocal about this. How did you all feel about this? Like, did you see this coming? Do you feel that it's right? Is it the Modern Pro Tour's fault? Like, what do you think?
I thought it was going to happen for Summer Bloom. I guess I wasn't expecting Twin. But I remember we were out having dinner before the pre-release, and then the official announcement dropped, and all of us could only think of one person, Tyler Cooper, and his foiled out Splinter Twin deck. And we're like, oh, Coop. And we go back, we're like, did you hear? He's like, yep. I'm just like, oh, God.
Well, so. To be fair, though, I mean, Cooper's deck had de-evolved to such a point where it wasn't even a Splinter Twin deck anymore. Like, he was the guy that was running so many discard spells, trying to make it Grixis, that he was like, I don't even run Pester Mites! And I'm like, none? And he's like, nope, I got my discard spells! And I'm like, what are you doing? So
it's like he was ahead of the game.
Right.
So now he can do something else now that Twin is gone, but still, and... I know there was a listener of ours that made the video of him flushing his Splinter Twins down the toilet.
He also put them in a food processor, and he tried lighting them on fire.
Yep. And then Coop made a video of Splinter Twin and Kiki Jiki and Deceiver to the tune of My Heart Will Go On.
Aww.
Yeah, it's quite wonderful. I was trying to link it, but like I don't think I can because it's private or something, but... So I feel for people that have had to go through, I guess, multiple different bannings, and they've had to change decks multiple times. That's unfortunate. I was reading some of the opinion pieces about this, and, you know, it could be because of a modern pro tour. Like, I mean, I don't know. But I like having a modern pro tour because I like seeing people be really competitive with modern. I think that that's really cool. But I don't want it, if it's hurting the format, I don't want that to happen either. I read that Jeff Hoagland was talking about blue and red can be more diverse now without having Splinter Twin there. People can explore some different options, which I think is pretty cool. And I agree with him that decks that were just bad might just still be bad. And decks that were good, they can still be good. Like, I can agree with that, you know. I'm not worried about anything from the ban personally. I'm just excited that I don't have to pack a lot of Twin Hate like I did before.
Yeah, I agree with Chris. I saw the Summer Bloom ban coming. I did not see the Splinter Twin ban coming at all. I always thought of Splinter Twin as a very good safety valve for the format, and I thought of it as sort of the deck that established the you can't win on turn three, but you can win on turn four rule. And so it was such a format-defining deck that I just didn't think it would ever go away. That being said, a lot of the decks were moving away from Splinter Twin anyway. We were seeing a lot more Grixis control decks than Splinter Twin decks. Like, I'm just thinking of, you know, the deck that Jerry T played at the Invitational, for example. We were seeing Twin sort of move away from the combo and just move into this sort of Swiss Army Knife control deck. And so I didn't think that this was really coming. And the only thing I can really think of, like the only explanation, could be that, you know, Wizards is afraid that Splinter Twin is going to win another Modern Pro Tour. You know, it won the Modern Pro Tour last year. They want to showcase how diverse the format is, and the risk of having the deck win again is too great. So they felt they had to shake it up. They felt they had to give players something different to do. And I'm not sure if that's necessarily what's healthy for the format. I know we've talked in the past about, you know, cards, you know, people investing lots of money in Modern and then having their deck be banned for the sake of, you know, making the Modern Pro Tour appealing, and, you know, the players losing buyer confidence, essentially. And, you know, while that may not happen with Splinter Twin necessarily, because, you know, the people playing Splinter Twin can just play Blue-Red Control, they can play Scapeshift, they can play Grixis Control, all the pieces are still there, I still worry that this trend of banning a top deck every year is going to push a lot of people out of the format and make people less likely to want to play Modern.
I did not see the Twin ban coming. I also have a friend, my friend Kobe, that I test with a lot, was also a devout Twin player and had a bunch of money invested in his deck. Maybe not as much as this Cooper character, but an unhealthy amount, probably. So he is quite sad. What I am worried about is Tron and the Eldrazi becoming big decks, because Splinter Twin kind of kept them in check because it wasn't a great matchup for Tron. And now that it's gone, I am worried. I hate fighting against Tron. I have not yet fought the Black-White Eldrazi deck, but I'm sure the time is coming. The deck I play is, you know, control, and decks that involve lands are just bad for control, like Scapeshift, Tron, anything that's doing big things with their mana is usually not a good matchup for us. So I'm pretty worried about that. I like that the format was shaken up, but I don't like that the reasoning behind it seems to be an entertainment factor for the Pro Tour. I felt like if they just banned Summer Bloom, then the rest of the format would just kind of go on as it is. And I think without Twin, we will see new decks crop up, and that's awesome. But I don't think that the reasoning, I mean, not that they said it outright, but I don't think the reasoning should be for the Pro Tour. So I'm excited to see what comes of it, but I'm kind of sad that it had to happen in this way, especially for people who did get the pod nerf and then also the twin nerf. So I don't like that people are starting to feel unsafe about investing money in the game, because, you know, it might just be the next one to go and then you're out $X hundred. So we'll see, but I'm I'm tentative and also excited.
Yeah. I'm pretty unfeeling in terms of this. That's my role on the cast. I'm fine with it. I also did not see the twin band coming. I had a feeling that something was going to get banned in terms of Amulet Bloom, but I wasn't sure what it was going to be. You know, I didn't know if it would be the namesake card. I didn't know if it would be Amulet. I didn't know if it would be Summer Bloom. I didn't know if it would be a combination, because I remember when Birthing Pod got banned, I told people that we were still going to see this deck. I said the deck doesn't even need Pod to work, and I'm pretty sure that you could just make like a junk value deck, junk being black, white, green, and still be okay. And here we are with Faux Pod, which is Abzan Company, which you can still play in this format. And so I had a feeling that if they banned one card from Amulet Bloom, that maybe the deck could still function. And so I wasn't sure if they would, you know, if they were that worried about it, that they would just ban multiple cards. Personally, as an ad nauseum player, I'm completely fine with both of these things. My twin matchup was fine. I never really worried about it. Amulet Bloom was always one of those cards, those decks that I didn't see enough of. And even I used to be one of those people that would devote sideboard slots to it and then realize it didn't make a damn bit of difference. So it just got to the point where if I got it and you had that Godhen, God bless you. I wasn't really going to try to stop you. What I am concerned about is the rise of Tron. And Tron is a good matchup for me, so I'm not worried about that. What I'm worried about is the Infect that's going to rise to beat Tron, because Infect is a foil for Tron, and Infect is terrible for me. I'm also worried about the rise of Blood Moon, because if land-based strategies like the Eldrazi deck, the Black-White Processor deck, and Tron become more popular, people might start packing more Blood Moon, which could also be bad for me. So to that end, I've started kind of playing with my mana base a little bit, adding more fetches, adding more basics to compensate for possible Blood Moon, and also adding some Darkness in my sideboard for Infect, because that can really buy me some time to go off. And as an ad nauseum player, I'm pretty optimistic, so I don't feel too much of a certain way about the bannings. I do want to bring up the concept of banning for the Pro Tour. Corbin Hostler from Brainstorm Brewery wrote an article which I thought was really good, and one of the things he addresses is this theory that they basically banned it for the Pro Tour or for ratings. And he says that he lists the chronological order of the modern bannings of the last couple of Pro Tours. And in 2011, the ban was in late December. In 2013, the ban was in late January. 2014, early February. And then this year and last year, it was in late January. So that seems to be pretty consistent, like around the same time of year. The only thing that isn't consistent is when the Pro Tours happened. So in 2011, the Pro Tour was in September. 2012, it was in October. 2013, they didn't have a Pro Tour for Modern due to a schedule change. And then in 2014 through 2016, the Pro Tour was always in February. And it just so happens that the timing of the Pro Tour has not been consistent, whereas the timing of the bannings always has been. And so he chalks this up to being a situation of correlation, not causation, and that this is something that people are sort of pointing to as a way to not have a real debate about the deck. And I kind of agree with that. I think he posted some really good data to support this. And I also agree with Jeff Hoogland. I thought he had a really level-headed response. And, you know, I've talked a little bit about the playing a worse version of something else. And, you know, we saw these Grixis control decks. We saw Team Geist. But ultimately, why play anything red-blue if you could just play Splinter Twin and trip and fall on your combo on turn 5? There was really no reason to. And so if you wanted to play one of the best decks in the format, just play Splinter Twin. And I think that with Twin gone, you can play Storm. You can play Scapeshift, you can play Team Geist, you can play Grixis, you could even play just a Jeskai control deck. I do think it opens things up for red-blue, whereas a lot of people wouldn't have touched it before when you can just play Splinter Twin. There was an article that came out this weekend written by a young lady named Hannah, who we had the pleasure of meeting at GP Oakland, and it came out on Vice. The article was called On the Grind with the Women of Magic the Gathering. What did you guys think about this? Because it doesn't seem like it got the widespread positive response that I was hoping it would.
I read the article. I didn't think that it was a bad article. I thought that they definitely highlighted some larger voices in the community and then some lesser known people. I liked that Hannah did do her follow-up that included, of course, ourselves and then other people that we know and love. And I thought that was really cool to be able to showcase more than just what the original article had. I do agree with someone on Twitter, I think said it, that hopefully in the future we won't need articles like this to highlight women in magic, because that will just be accepted as like a normal thing. And so maybe that will help, you know, show off faces in the community that just happen to be female and be like, hey, we play Magic. We've been playing Magic for a long time. We're here too. And I just like that it was supposed to give some more exposure. I haven't seen any links to it on Reddit or anything. I don't know if the article got passed around very much. I was going to try to maybe link it to some people and see if they could show it off, but I haven't really heard anything from anyone saying, oh, I read this article that, you know, you might like or something.
Yeah, I agree. Most of the press that I've seen surrounding the article has come, you know, either from Hannah herself or from, you know, people that I know who happen to have been mentioned in the article or who were interviewed for it. I haven't seen it passed around widely, which, you know, disappoints me because I think it's obviously an important subject to talk about. But I will say, you know, as we mentioned in the last episode, there were a lot of women in Oakland. Frank Lepore posted a picture of 5 women in the feature match area at the same time, which I believe is a new record. You know, there were 2 female players, 2 female judges, and Athena Huey doing commentary, not necessarily commentary, but, you know, research for player interviews. And it was just unprecedented to see just how many women were involved in the event. And, you know, I think regardless of how many shares the article got, it's very obvious that women are making great strides in Magic right now.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed that I heard about the article through Hannah when it came out, on Facebook. And it seemed like when, you know, Megan Wolf wrote her article on Star City, and, you know, there's been a couple other articles. It was like, I saw everybody posting about it on Twitter, like, check out this article, take a read. And then it seemed like for this one, it just didn't get a lot of attention. And maybe that's good. Maybe there's so many women coming up that people aren't as interested in it now. I don't know how you can exactly twist that to make it positive. But I was a little disappointed that there wasn't a bunch more people raving about it. I did like her follow-up to the original article, and I liked that she included a couple of male perspectives. I know LSV was interviewed in it, and he kind of said the same things as Athena about having a woman in coverage and how a lot of people were like, it's based on who you know, not how good you are at the game, or not based on any, like, play skill. And I like that she did bring that up, because I think that's a thing that we've heard a lot of mumblings about, but not a huge stance that anybody's taken on it. So I was really glad that she brought that up in her interview. Other than that, I kind of wish that it had turned out the way Hannah wanted. Apparently her editor had done some broad clipping of text. So I am glad that she did the follow-up and included all of that in it.
It sounded like the feedback that I saw, there was a big discussion about this on the Lady Planeswalker Facebook group, and there were some women who felt that the post was kind of negative, or the post was sort of patronizing, in that it was saying, you know, look at these girls, you know, God, they've been through so much, and they're here now, and some people kind of had an issue with that tone. Like, you know, they felt it might have been a little condescending to say, you know, good for them, you know, good for these girls, and I didn't really share that opinion. Mm-hmm. The only thing I had a problem with, which I, you know, we all kind of agree on, is I wish the article would have been longer. I had a talk with Hannah a week before the GP. We all interviewed with her, and she worked really, really hard on this. She was there all 3 days. She was there Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I saw her around the venue taking pictures. She had her big, you know, professional-looking camera. When I talked to her, she was very passionate about the issue. She was, as the kids say, she was woke. and I know that she really wanted to give this topic its due. And so when she sent me the link, I was expecting it to be like an in-depth piece, like, you know, with a lot of words and pages to it. And so I was just a little disappointed when I clicked on it and I read the whole thing in like 5 minutes. And I was like, I could have read this on my phone, like on the bus to work. You know, I just expected this to be, to have a little more substance to it. And that's not her fault. You know, she admitted that her editor had, you know, had gotten kind of cut happy and cut a lot of content. And so she did release the Imager Gallery with additional pictures and additional interviews and such. I thought it was a fine article in that regard. I was also a little bit concerned on a micro level that the editor didn't really seem to have edited it. Like when I first got it, Amy's name was spelled wrong. There were ellipses everywhere. And, like, Planeswalker was spelled wrong, and it bothered me because, we go back to how women have to be exceptional and men can often get by on being mediocre and all that, and, like, I feel like if those errors had been sent out in a dude's article, it wouldn't have been a big deal, but I worried that if somebody saw this, they'd be like, oh, well, she can't even write. Look at all these spelling mistakes. Look at all these periods. And that worried me. Like, I was worried that her editor might have kind of hung her out to dry in that regard, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. You know, where somebody would have looked at, oh, look at this dumb girl, she can't even write. And I was just like, can you? And I was the one who even asked her, I was like, can you have your editor fix these? Because I don't want you looking bad. And I was worried that people would, you know, go into this article and they wouldn't read it because of something like that. And I know how people can be. And so, you know, that was a little thing that kind of gnawed at me, was it just felt like her editor really didn't. Her editor did a lot of cutting, but it doesn't look like her editor actually went back and really edited it. It also ends on a really clunky note. Like, it ends with a quote from Gabby, and no shade to Gabby. Gabby's fantastic, but, like, the quote they used wasn't, like, an ending quote.
Yeah, it just, like cut off, and I was right, did it get right. cut out? Like,
right, like, you're looking at the quote, and you're thinking it's going to lead you to another paragraph, and then that's the end. And so, like I said, I just felt like the editor, you know, missed the spirit of the piece, and they also didn't really do right by her by not really editing the article very well. Like, I know Stibbs, you know, he's not with us anymore, but, you know, when he was editor of Gathering Magic, he was always looking out for me. Like, he would be the one that's like, well, I'm not going to send you out there looking crazy, girl. You know, fix this soundbite. We're not going to call it this. And he, you know, really looked out for me. He wasn't just interested in getting clicks. And I just feel like her editor, you know, didn't really feel that way. Otherwise, I do think more visibility is always a good thing. I saw a lot of people on Twitter retweeting it. I didn't bother to look for it on Reddit because I don't go to Reddit for anything women-related. It might have been there. I don't know. I just saw what was happening on Facebook and Twitter. Our listener question this week, we received an email from a young man named Richard, and Richard just asked us a slew of questions, wanting to get to know us a little bit more. So I figured it would be fun to kind of throw some random questions out there and just give him what he's looking for. So you guys ready?
Sure.
Yep.
Okay. What is your favorite card type?
Instant. Does that count?
Yes.
Well, when I read that question, I was like, is it like, I mean, I guess he would have said creature type, and then I just went into it farther, but I was like, instants are obviously the superior spell.
me too. I like instants too.
Yeah, because they have that kind of like gotcha factor, where it's like, you thought you were going to do this. JK, no. So I'll go with that as well.
Okay, I'm going to be the detractor here and say enchantments, because I have a lot of love for Constellation and for Legacy Enchantress, and so anytime I see a new enchantment, I wonder, you know, can this be a brick in my pillow fort that I'm going to build? And so there was a new enchantment in Oath, I think it was like Zendikar's Awakening. Mm-hmm. And I was like, can I put that in Enchantress? And people are like, Aaron, no. And I'm just like, anytime I see an enchantment, that's my first thought. If you could have the power of one planeswalker, which would you choose?
I think I would choose Gideon Jura. I'm not sure if he means like if I could do a specific ability that he does, or if I could just be like badass like him. I'm not really sure, but Gideon Jura is like the love of my life besides Watson. And he just does everything that you could ever want to do. Like, he fogs and he destroys creatures and he hits them and he's indestructible. Like, he is just the best. The best one.
See, I would think indestructibility would be good in your line of work, Katie, because you're giving bears root canals and you're like giving cows halter tops. And like, let's say you have to, you know, trim a tiger's claws or do something dangerous. You could have your head in their mouth, do a root canal, and they could snap down on you and you're okay.
Just bounce back and go for coffee afterwards.
You'd be the indestructible veterinarian. How cool. Put that on your business card.
That would be good. I got a lot of bruises from work when dogs like jump up on you and they don't have their nails trimmed and they kind of like dig their nails into your thighs, and then I get a lot of bruises from that. So trim your dog's nails, and I need to get indestructible ability.
Katie, the indestructible Neil.
Yes.
Well, I think mine would be Veraska. I definitely want the petrifying glare because I can glare really well. And so I like to say that if I could get on the pro tour just from giving side eye, I would be like the next Kibler. Like I would be that. So having a glare to sort of look at people like, oh, turn one Grafdigger's cage. Ooh, just freeze you to stone. It'd be great.
My favorite planeswalker is Venser the Sojourner. I love Venser so much. And
you just like bouncing things.
I love to bounce things, you guys. Especially things with really great I just love creatures with great ETB effects. I love Manowar, I love Moldrifter, and Snapcaster Mage, and, you know, Venser the creature, he's pretty cool too. Venser's ultimate, you get an emblem with whenever you cast a spell, exile target permanent. Yes, I would love to do that all day.
Did you get an emblem last night?
No, I didn't. I did get to bounce a couple things. Like, I got to exile my Journey to Nowhere and take a better creature with it, which was cool. But, Venser wasn't really the star of the show last night. The star of the show was Elish Norn.
Really? Because Hallie played in Legacy Cube last night. So how often did you see her?
Elish Norn? I had three opponents just, like, snap... Well, the same opponent in two consecutive games. I had three games end pretty much just when I cast Elish Norn.
They scooped.
Yeah, they scooped. One of my opponents... there was one game where Elish Norn was on the stack and my opponent just sent me like three really nasty messages and then scooped. But you get the point.
Well, you guys are probably know what I'm going to say. I'm going to say Jace because Jace is the shit. And I like to draw cards and I like to cast spells for freezies. And yeah, I'm all about that. So Jace does all those things, and if I could be a planeswalker, it'd probably be Jace. Be like, I don't give a shit what any of you guys say. I'm just going to walk these planes like a boss.
Now, see, I thought you would have, like, a variation of Nissa's where, like, you'd animate your playmats. And then you'd have, like, this army of, like, four playmat creatures and be like, rise, my children! And then...
I guess I could do that, too. I mean, Nissa's pretty dope.
Just saying. You know, and then, like, you know, there's the search ability where Nissa, Sage Animus, you know, look at the top card. If it's a playmat, put it in your hand. And then you just have, like, this pile of playmats and then, arise! I think that'd be dope.
Do you have a particular Jace that you like? Like, if you had to pick one Jace to be, like, you got transformed into that card and people got to cast you, like...
Shit. Like, that's, like...
Have you ever used Mind Sculptor?
I've never used it personally. I'm hoping that maybe someday that can happen. Like, it's a personal goal.
It's in Hallie's Cube, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I didn't get to touch it, unfortunately. That'd be so good. Oh, my God.
Pretty sure you drafted it that time, Aaron.
Yeah, it even made me a believer. Like, I went into it going, I don't know about this, guys. And then, like, the first couple activations, it was like, I get it now. Like, I get what the hype is about.
Get it? I think I'd be Architect of Thought. That's what I'm thinking. Yes.
He's a good choice.
Mm-hmm.
If you could have one card from Magic banned in all formats except Vintage, which would you choose?
There's a lot of cards I hate.
And I'm the hateful one.
I don't like Goryeo's Vengeance lately, so that can go to fuck offity land.
People were surprised that didn't get banned.
Yeah, they talk about Splinter Twin and Summer Bloom and leave that deck for us.
I know.
$38 a pop. It's up there.
I haven't played enough Legacy to know what I absolutely hate in Legacy yet. I don't really like, I've watched, like, a couple Legacy matches here and there, and I don't really like watching Wasteland, but I don't know if that justifies, like, I'm like, you only have two land. Like, I like to have, like, 1,200 land to be able to do whatever I want with. And that's just not really how Legacy is. But in Modern, I would like to see Blood Moon just bite the dust.
I figured you would say Slippery Boggle.
Oh, God, yeah, you're right. How could I have even missed that? Yes, I retract my answer.
There were people that were saying that Boggles is a good foil for Tron.
Ew.
That's true.
So you could see more Boggles, Katie. Gross.
I definitely hate Boggles more than Tron, so I guess I'll pray to the Tron overlords on that front. But
am I the only one that says Boggles?
Yeah, it took me a while to realize that there aren't two Gs in that word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm also the goofball that says Thrune. Thrune the Lostral. Yeah, I say Thrune. And people are like, what's wrong with you? I'm like, well, we don't know that it's a hard U, so.
I always call him Thrun, because whenever I cast him, I'm just like, you are now entering the Thunderdome!
Oh my God, that's genius. The Thunderdome.
The Thunderdome.
Well, I think we have our title for this week's show. I was going to go with the Indestructible Veterinarian, but Thunderdome is pretty.
I think that takes the cake.
You win the internets, madam. Okay, so Katie would probably have Slippery Boggles. Chris, you said Goryeo's Vengeance. Hallie, did you pick one?
I would probably say Umezawa's Jitte. That card is really frustrating to play against in Legacy. It's so good against so many decks, and it's also really broken and limited. I remember, I think there was an episode of LR that LSV closed with, like, his five most, like, powerful cards in limited or something like that. Number one was just, I think number one was Umezawa's Jitte. I don't remember. But it's just, if you've ever played it in Cube or anything, it's just, it is insane. I made a point of not putting it in my Cube. I mean, I don't have a whole lot of equipment in my Cube anyway, but Jitte just warps games, and it's, I've played in Cube drafts where I've watched people play with it, and I have seen them just not drop a game, or just, it just does so many different things, it has so much utility, and what a lot of people don't realize is it's not, they think the card says when a creature deals damage to a, deals combat damage to a player, it's just when it deals combat damage, you get to put counters on it. It's really good. It's like oppressively good. So yeah, I don't like Jitte. I don't like it in Cube. I don't like it equipped to a True Name Nemesis. I just don't like it. So I would like to see that banned.
Well, speaking of oppression, I think that Rest in Peace should be banned in all formats.
I knew it.
Fuck Rest in Peace. Fuck everyone who had a part in it. I curse the day it was made. I hope that anybody who had a hand in its creation has a curse where their socks never stay on their feet. Hate everything about it. Hate, hate, hate. I can handle Graphtaker's Cage. I can come back from a Nihil's Spellbomb. I can come back from a Relic of Progenitus. Scavenging Ooze is annoying, but I can kill it. But Rest in Peace just is everything I hate about life. It just makes me so sad. And so I would be completely fine with that card just being obliterated off the face of the earth.
Well, now I'm just sad. I should have gone up there with my Rest in Peace to Therese and been like, hey,
listen,
can you just sign this to Aaron, love Therese, and I'll go give it to her.
Yes.
We were one block away from Chinatown, Missy. I could easily put a hit out on you. It would not have been hard. Not have been hard. I don't know if you guys are okay answering this, but there is a fuck, marry, kill question.
Do you know that I didn't know what that was until last year?
Are you serious?
I'm very serious. Well, I was like, is this like MASH, where you pick the house and the car? Like, I'm so confused.
No, it means you have to choose one that you would make whoopee with, and then you have to choose one that you would marry for life, and you have to choose one that you don't like and you would kill.
Oh, that's easy.
Oh, yeah? Okay, fine.
Okay. I would fuck Jace, marry Soren, kill Gideon of those choices.
Oh, my God. Ah, yep. My cool. Homeboy.
Yeah, I am, I agree on Jace, I would swap Gideon and Soren. I don't really get Soren.
Yeah, Soren seems like the one that would, like, cry in the middle of it.
Yeah.
You know, where you're having, like, Katie knows.
Oh my god.
Katie's like, I have been there, girl.
I did not say those words. I
feel like all of my feelings, my undead, undying feelings.
Yeah, no.
I think I would marry Gideon because he just seems like such a good provider.
Right? And he's indestructible.
Yeah.
He can take anything, and, you know, sickness or health, you know, financial ruin or wealth, he will be there. He's like State Farm.
Uh-huh. He fogs through everything. He will take the brunt of the damage in our lives. He will destroy creatures if I need anything destroyed.
And he's loyal.
Yeah. And I think I'd probably bang the old Jace Meister and I'd kill off Soren.
The old Jace Meister. See, I'm actually, okay, so I would marry Gideon. I would kill Jace.
No.
Why?
Because Jace is playing mind games with you. Jace is that guy that's like, you know, you go to call him and you're like, you know, you want to get together this week? And he'd be like, I might call you. What, you might call me? Or he's the one that's like, you know, oh, we'll get together around middle of the month. And then you never hear from him. Like, he's that guy. Soren's the one that you kind of, like, you'd hate fuck. Where, like, you don't really like him, but you're like, you're hot, you're fine. Just don't tell people we did this. Okay, just no. And, you know, he's probably kind of broody, and, like, you just really wouldn't want to be friends with him, but you're fine just keeping it at whoopee. Jace is just, no. Like, just, you know, needy, and mind games, and dramatic with the cloak, and just, ugh. And...
See, I think of it the other way. Like, Jace would be, like... He'd be, like, the guy in, like, the emo band or something, like, the band leader that you, like, idolize and think is super hot, and then you go and screw him, and then you're like, cool, like, I was just, like, a fanboy type of thing. And I'm completely fine with that. Be like, I'm just part of Jace's fangirl entourage.
Oh, no, I wouldn't want to be that, though. But Soren's also, like, the tortured, you know, like, I'm not saying I like the movie or I like the character, but, you know, Christian Grey, when he's like, I've had a rough life. You should stay away from me. And it's just like, really? Why should I stay away from you? And then, you know, and then you have your fun, but then you're like, oh, you're damaged. Like, I wouldn't date you, but we're fine making whoopee. Like,
even if he cries?
Well.
Yeah, what if he's a crier?
Well, I would assume that it wouldn't be like a constant cry. Like, it maybe like once every 7 rounds. But like.
One out of 7 is still a high number, it seems to me. I mean, no offense if anybody out there is a crier, but.
Oh, man. Moving on. what is an activity or hobby that you've been wanting to try but just haven't yet?
Archery.
Really?
Same here.
Yep.
Holy crap.
Archery. Yes. I read Kevin Smith's run on Green Arrow, like, a long time ago, and ever since then I wanted to get into archery, so I've actually been trying to take archery classes for a number of years, but given when they're offered and... I think it's like a month-long course, like, or maybe like 1 or 2 times a week. It just doesn't jive with my work schedule. But hopefully, maybe in the future, I can do it. Because I actually went shooting, like, with the gun, like, last year or the year before.
What?
Yeah, it was awesome. Like, I was totally terrified, but I was like, cool. And then there were some people there that were shooting. They were doing archery, and I was like, oh, my God. I want to be just like you. And so when I tell people I want to do archery, they're like, oh, so you want to go hunting? I'm like, no. See, I don't want to kill anything. I just want to shoot. And they're like, that's weird. And I'm like, no, that makes sense to me. So, yep, that's mine.
You're going to get all Katniss on a bit.
Is shooting guns like a normal thing in your state? Because for us, it's like a 100% accepted pastime for like 95% of people.
Yeah, like for the
like people just go out and shoot guns all the time. Like everybody has a gun in their car. It's a normal Montana thing.
Oh my
god, it's way more accepted in Washington than it was in New York where I grew up.
Wow, I've never been near a gun. I've never touched a gun.
Yeah, me neither. Ooh. Me neither. I never knew anyone who owned a gun when I was growing up, but I've met quite a few people who do since I moved out here.
But then again, I also have 2 scars on me from accidental knife things, so it's probably best I don't have a gun around me.
Yeah, it's a lot of power. You just kind of gotta be careful. But yeah, Wisconsin's weird because like we have concealed carry here, but it's not like everyone's like, yep, my gun's in my car, normal occurrence. But some people I'm sure have them, so I don't know.
Yeah, it's always like the people with like trucks that have rifles in their truck beds. Like that's quite normal for here. That doesn't worry me at all. But they're also very like responsible with their guns, that's typically. Good. So,
The thing I would like to try, and I mean try seriously, is I'd like to try streaming. You know, I do have my sort of, you know, bargain bin stream that I throw up when I'm feeling up to it, and I, you know, I don't have a layout, I don't have music, I don't have a very good computer for it yet, but my position at work is being eliminated in April, so I will be out of work. And my plan is to go back to school in the fall, and so I'm going to take the summer off. And one of the things that I would like to do is upgrade my computer. I would like to get a decent layout. I would like to be able to play music while I'm playing. I have a playlist already figured out. And I would like to try streaming. I'd like to have a schedule, and I would like to play my off-the-wall decks. Like, I'd play Dredge one day and Ad Nauseam one day, and then whatever I'm playing in Standard one day. And I'd really like to give that, like, a solid go. Like, I probably wouldn't charge money for it, but I'd like to come up with little icons. You know, maybe I'd have, like, a girl emoji, or, you know, just little taglines that I like to use, and I think that'd be a lot of fun. I think that's something I could be good at.
If you had asked me like 6 months ago, I would have said rock climbing, but went and did that now.
I'm killing it.
Yeah, I've gone up like a grade a month, which has been really, really good for me. I've just been practicing a whole lot. I would like to get into hiking, though. I was never really an outdoorsy person growing up because I grew up like in a suburb and then, you know, move to a city, and I've just never really been around, you know, outdoorsy people until I, you know, moved out to Seattle. I would really like to go hiking, you know, with Robert and Kirby. I'm sure Kirby would love to go hiking. And I know there's that Pokemon Go game that's coming out in a couple months, and my plan is, you know, for Robert and I to get the game and then, you know, go out hiking and catch Pokemon in the woods and stuff. So that's something that I would like to do.
Wait, you can capture them in real time?
Yeah, it's sort of like a, I don't know, are they like holograms? Like how does it work, Chris? Do you know?
I have a vague understanding of what's going on, but I think it's supposed to be like a mobile app for your phone. And then, yeah, I think it might be, like, a holographic thing. There is a game that already exists that kind of does that for the DS. It's, like, Dream... Oh, God, it's on my DS. I don't remember what it's called, but Dream... Not Dream Catchers. It could be. I'm not sure.
Is it, like, geocaching?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like geocaching, but with Pokemon. And it's something ready. That... Yeah, I'm really excited.
I dated a geocacher once. That was an experience. Like, you're trying to have a romantic dinner, and he's like, there's a thing 2.5 miles away. And I'm just like, can we get their dinner? He's like, but there's a clue underneath you. And I'm just like, wait, no, there isn't. Stop. And just really tedious. And the final question. Get ready.
Uh-oh.
If both Kirby and Watson were in front of you, who would you pet first?
Double pet.
Why like, not both?
Wow. Yeah, like
why not both?
Two-handed. That's why we have two hands.
To pet puppies with.
Yes.
It's two pet puppies. So you're all gonna go with both?
No, yeah. I'd pet Watson. Sorry. Like, so when I see him, I just get this overwhelming joy where I grab his beard and then I like and I'm doing it in front of me, but I can't really describe it. It's like a, like I just rub his face with both my hands, and I like hold his little beard holders in my hand, and I go, "Doo, good boy," and I love grabbing his beard, man. And he tolerates it. He doesn't really like it when I grab his beard, but I just that beard, it gets me every time, every time. Sorry, it's selfish.
No, it's like okay.
For anyone listening, there's been a very, very, very subtle, like, #TeamKirby, #TeamWatson kind of rivalry building, and so I had to kind of add that questioning, because I thought it'd be great.
I would pet Kirby afterwards, like, as soon as I was done with Watson's beard, though, like...
Oh, so he gets a pity pet, I get it. Well, you hear that, Hallie?
It's like a runner-up pet.
Hey, I understand. You know, everyone loves their dog. Like, it's just how it is.
So you're saying you wouldn't pet Watson first?
I mean, I would... I don't know. I mean, I do really want to pet Watson because I've never pet Watson before. And every time I meet a new dog, I'm like, oh, new dog. Hi, new dog. But then sometimes Kirby gets jealous and I'm just like, oh, Kirby, I love you too. Don't worry.
Watson's got these like Albert Einstein type eyebrows that stick up and you can like brush them back on his head and it just he looks crazy and it's great. You'll have to try it sometime.
So you mentioned, you know, doing things to pets that they tolerate. I have this thing for nibbling on my cat's ears, and she hates it, but I do it anyways. Like, I also like, you know, nibble on her ears. I talk to her like a baby, because I'm a weirdo. And then I'll, like, gnaw on the ear, and she does this, like, she hates it. And then I'll stop, and I can't help it. She just want to nibble on every part of her. It's so bad.
I've never heard of somebody nibbling on their pet's ears.
I know, I'm a weirdo. I actually don't really like dogs. Like, So I would, whichever dog seemed friendly and came to me, I would probably pet them first. But if they're really loud or they seem to be aggressive, I get kind of skittish. So like whichever dog kind of approached me very calmly and was like, "Sup, girl," I'd be like, "Okay, you seem cool." But like if I walk in the door and you're jumping on me and yipping and barking, I can't do it. It's like, "Oh, get it away, put it in the other room." So it would depend on which dog was the most passive towards me.
Let's up the stakes. Who would you pet first if it was Kirby, Watson, or Milk?
Well, Milk hates me. Milk openly hates Milk me. Hates when you? I stayed with Milk hates me. When I stayed with Mike, though, Milk does not shut up. Like Milk yelps and barks, and Mike swears it's because he loves me. But I'm like one of the few people that he just goes off on. Like I did manage to keep him quiet with potato chips, but when I ran out of chips, he kept yelping. So like every time he'd yelp, I'd give him a chip, and he'd be cool. But then like 30 seconds later, the yelping would start, and then all of a sudden I was like, "Shit, I'm out of chips." And Mike's like, "Well, there's the brakes." And so Milk hates me. But I think if they both approach me and we're comfortable and calm, I'd probably pet Watson just because I think there's more texture there. Like, I'm really curious to see what it feels like to pet Watson. You know, it doesn't seem like a smooth experience. And I mean that in a good way. But, like, you know, Kirby has this beautiful coat and, like, beautiful dog and God bless him. But Watson, there's just some stank on him and I like
that. Stanky Watson.
Some stank. I like a little stank. Any magic plans this weekend?
I have all the magic plans this weekend.
Okay.
I'm going to be playing in a release day FNM at my game store. They usually do standard, but for release day, they have a sealed tournament, so I'm going to be playing in that. Also playing in a sealed pre-TQ on Saturday. And then on Sunday, I'm going to be playing Two-Headed Giant.
I'm just going to do FNM for the lulz.
I don't know if I'm going to play Magic. We do a release draft every FNM after a new set comes out, so I might go do that. Depends on how social I'm feeling. This whole being back at school for like a bajillion hours with a bunch of other people sometimes makes me less social, but we'll see. I'm unsure.
Yeah, I'm going to pick up some affordable cards from Oath. I'm going to pick up a Ruin in Their Wake. I'm going to pick up some of the Whale, that Warping Whale card. I might pick up some Kozilek's Return. I think they're like $20 a piece now in pre-order, so I'm like, But I'd like at least two, just because I'm kind of keeping my eye on how the ramp decks turn out. I'm probably going to be playing Modern this weekend. I'm probably going to be staying in this weekend. We did break the below zero on the thermometer, so you have to kind of weigh it, where it's like, do I like FNM to go out in minus 5-degree weather? No. So I'll probably just stay in and play some Modern Leagues. We are going to regionals in 2 or 3 weeks, so I want to practice some Ad Nauseam. It looks like it's going to be Modern for a while, so I just want to kind of do some tweaks to my deck and see how that goes, and just stay in and rest. I just want to feel better. I have a wedding next weekend, and so I have to make sure I'm up and at them for that. So just staying warm and playing lots of Modern League.
Cool, that sounds fun.
Yeah, yeah. So if anybody's enjoyed listening to the show, how can they find you all and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. You can watch me stream on twitch.tv/HalCanSan. I've done a couple streams already if you want to go and watch the archives. I had a really fun draft last night, and I should be streaming again probably this Sunday. But again, follow me on Twitter if you want to be kept informed about that. And you can always find my writing here on Gathering Magic.
And I am Katie. You can find me on Twitter at MeanMugger, that's MeanMugger, or by email, katie.neal14@gmail.com.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is at TEHKRIZ. My Gmail is YOTEHKRIZ@gmail.com. And my Snapchat is Cryptic Command, spelled with K's.
Where's the picture?
Oh, it's there.
What is it?
It is Katie. Face. I love your hair, Katie.
Isn't her hair gorgeous?
It is.
Thank you. My hairstylist beautiful. Is like a little goddess. She's just great.
Man, send her my way.
I will.
What can she do for a big-headed girl like me? Just
everything.
Yeah, because I'm very limited. I have a big dome. I can't do cute hair like that.
But... And we don't have tax in Montana, so you save on your haircuts. And other purchases.
Awesome. I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at OriginalEstrus. That is OriginalEstrus. You can email me personally at estrus@alitashirks.com. You can find the show on Twitter at the GF Bracket. You can find our Patreon at patreon.com/thegirlfriendbracket. And you can find us every Friday at gatheringmagic.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.